The music was loud enough to drown out warning. Cars lined the road. Teenagers spilled into the yard in the house, laughing, filming, moving in loose circles that felt harmless until they did not. Brandon Smothers was there to be seen, not to be hunted. A high school athlete, known, liked, someone people expected to see again on Monday morning. The shots came fast, no warning, no argument loud enough to cut through the noise before it happened, just a crack, then another, then panic. Bodies scattered, phones dropped. Someone screamed his name, someone else ran. When the music stopped, Brandon was on the ground, bleeding, still. The night that had felt ordinary minutes earlier turned into a crime scene under flashing lights. By the time police arrived, the damage was done. One teenager was dead. A community would not sleep the same again. And the question that followed would not go away. Who brought a gun to a party? And why did Brandon Smothers never leave alive? Chapter 1. Set up and stakes. The party was already crowded when Brandon Smothers arrived. Cars were parked along the road and in nearby yards, headlights cutting across groups of teenagers moving in and out of the house. Music pulsed through open doors and windows. Voices overlapped. Laughter came easy. It was the kind of gathering that had become routine. No supervision, no plan. Just young people filling a night. Brandon was still in high school, an athlete, a senior with a future people talked about with certainty. He had a reputation for being easygoing, known more for sports than for trouble. Friends later said he had no reason to expect danger. This was supposed to be another night that ended with stories, not sirens. Inside, the house was packed. Outside, clusters formed around cars and the edge of the yard. Some people drank, others filmed short videos. The energy was loose but not violent, at least not at first. At some point, tension crept in. Witnesses later described raised voices, a disagreement. No single version matched another completely. Some said it was brief. Others said it lingered. What was consistent was that it did not seem serious enough to turn deadly. Not to the people watching. Not to Brandon. Gunfire broke that illusion. The first shot cut through the music. It took a moment for people to register what they were hearing. Then came more shots. Panic followed instantly. People ran in every direction. Some dropped to the ground. Others scrambled for cars or fences. Screams replaced music. Brandon was hit. Friends rushed toward him as others fled. Blood pooled beneath him. Someone shouted for help. Someone else called emergency services, voice shaking as they tried to explain where they were and what had happened. Phones came out, then went still. The night froze around him. Police were dispatched within minutes. When they arrived, the party was already dispersing. Cars sped away. People hid or stood in shock. Officers secured the scene, pushing back those who remained. Paramedics worked quickly, but there was nothing they could do. Brandon Smothers was pronounced dead at the scene. The yard that had held music and laughter became evidence. Shell casings were visible on the ground. Vehicles were parked at odd angles where people had fled. Shoes and cups were left behind. The house stood quiet, lights still on, doors open. News traveled fast. By the time dawn approached, word had reached his school. Teachers, coaches, teammates woke to messages they did not want to believe. Parents checked on their children. Students texted each other in disbelief. Brandon was not someone people expected to lose like this. Law enforcement began the early stages of the investigation immediately. Officers marked off areas of the yard and surrounding street. Photographs were taken. Evidence was collected. Witnesses were asked to stay, though many had already left. Some were afraid. Some did not want to talk. Some claimed they had not seen anything. Investigators knew the first hours mattered. Parties like this often produce confusion and silence. Alcohol, fear, and loyalty complicated the truth. Everyone heard something. Fewer people claimed to see anything clearly. As the scene was processed, one reality became unavoidable. Someone had brought a gun into a crowded space filled with teenagers. Someone had fired it, and Brandon Smothers had paid the price. His family learned of his death shortly after. The details were limited: a party, a shooting. Their son was gone. The words did not fit together in a way that made sense. They never would. By morning, patrol cars still lingered. Neighbors stepped outside, looking at the taped-off yard with disbelief. This was not how the area was supposed to be known. This was not how Brandon's name was supposed to enter public conversation. The stakes were clear before the sun rose. A teenager was dead. A shooter had fled. Witnesses were scattered. The community wanted answers, and the clock was already working against them. Somewhere in the chaos of that night, someone knew what happened. The question was whether they would talk before the truth disappeared with the crowd. Chapter 2. Escalation and reversal. Daylight changed the scene, but not the damage. What had been a yard full of teenagers was now quiet, marked by tape and evidence flags. Investigators returned early, moving slowly, documenting what the night had left behind. Shell casings were photographed and logged. Their placement told a partial story, one measured in feet and angles, not names. The house showed signs of a fast exit. Doors stood open. Furniture inside was shifted. Outside, tire marks cut through grass where cars had left in a hurry. Officers noted vehicle positions and paths of travel. Nothing suggested a single clean escape. It looked like panic in every direction. Witnesses were the next problem. Detectives began interviews the same day. Some people came forward on their own. Others were tracked down through phone records and social media posts tied to the party. The accounts were inconsistent. Several people reported hearing an argument. Few agreed on who was involved. Descriptions of the shooter varied in height, clothing, and direction of travel. Fear shaped the room during interviews. Teenagers avoided eye contact. Phones buzzed constantly. Many answers ended with the same phrase. I did not see it. I do not know who did it. I just heard shots and ran. Investigators understood the pattern. Large parties often produced noise without clarity. Alcohol blurred memory. Loyalty kept mouths shut. Some witnesses worried about retaliation. Others feared implicating friends. Silence became another obstacle. As interviews continued, detectives built a profile of Brandon Smothers beyond the night he died. He was a student athlete, a senior, known by teachers and coaches as dependable. He had no documented history of violence, no ongoing disputes known to law enforcement. Nothing suggested he arrived at the party looking for trouble. That absence mattered. It shifted the focus away from him as a driver of conflict and toward the environment around him. The question was no longer what Brandon did, but what happened around him that escalated so fast. The autopsy was conducted according to standard procedure. The cause of death was determined to be gunshot wounds. The findings were documented clinically. There was no indication of prolonged struggle. The manner of death was ruled a homicide. Ballistics work followed. The shell casings recovered from the scene were submitted for testing. Investigators looked for matches in state and federal databases. They searched for links to other crimes. Each result took time. Days passed without confirmation. Tips began to come in. Some were vague. Others named individuals who had attended the party. Detectives treated each tip carefully, separating rumor from verifiable detail. Several names surfaced more than once. These individuals were identified as persons of interest. That designation meant only that investigators wanted to speak with them. It did not mean guilt. Interviews with these individuals produced mixed results. Some denied being near the shooting. Others admitted being present but claimed they fled immediately. Alibis were checked where possible. Phone location data was requested. Surveillance cameras in the surrounding area were canvassed. Footage provided fragments, a car speeding away, groups running, shadows crossing yards, no clear image of a shooter, no definitive moment that tied a face to a weapon. Pressure mounted quickly. Brandon's family began asking for updates. The school district released statements acknowledging the loss. Counselors were made available to students. Vigils were organized. Candles and jerseys appeared at the school gates. Behind the scenes, investigators faced a familiar threat. The longer a case remained unresolved, the harder it became to move forward. Memories faded, stories aligned, fear hardened into silence. A turning point seemed possible when detectives re-examined timelines. By comparing call logs, text messages, and witness statements, they narrowed the window of the shooting to a short span of minutes. That compression mattered. It reduced the number of people who could have been in specific positions at the moment shots were fired. Still, no one admitted to pulling the trigger. At this stage, there were allegations but no charges. Investigators were careful in their language. They confirmed what could be proven and avoided naming suspects publicly without evidence strong enough to hold in court. That restraint frustrated some in the community. Others understood the risk of moving too fast. The case reached a critical tension point. Evidence existed, but not enough to close the circle. Witnesses knew more than they were saying. Someone had seen something. The question was whether fear or conscience would win. As days turned into weeks, the investigation balanced on a thin edge. Either a breakthrough would come, or the case would begin to slip into uncertainty. For Brandon Smothers, time no longer moved. For everyone else, it was running out. Chapter 3, Resolution and Aftermath. By the time the investigation reached its final phase, the shape of the case was clear, even if the answers were not. Detectives had mapped the night as far as the evidence allowed. They knew where people stood. They knew when the shots were fired. They knew Brandon Smothers had not been the aggressor. What they did not have was a clean line from a gun to a hand they could prove belonged to a specific person beyond reasonable doubt. Law enforcement reviewed the case internally more than once. Supervisors questioned every step. Evidence was checked again. Interviews were revisited. The same obstacles remained: conflicting statements, limited cooperation, no forensic result that tied a weapon definitively to a suspect already in custody. If an arrest occurred, it would have to survive court. That standard shaped every decision. Investigators understood the pressure to act, but they also knew the cost of a failed prosecution. A weak case would not honor Brandon's life. It would close doors permanently. Public updates were measured. Authorities confirmed the case remained active. They stated that leads were still being followed. They encouraged anyone with information to come forward. They avoided naming suspects. Allegations continued to circulate privately, but none rose to the level of proven fact. For Brandon's family, the waiting was its own punishment. They attended meetings. They asked questions. They listened to explanations about evidence thresholds and witness reliability. None of it brought relief. Justice felt distant, shaped by rules that did not ease grief. At the school, the impacts settled into routine. Brandon's locker was cleared. His seat in class stayed empty. Coaches spoke about him carefully, emphasizing discipline and potential without turning him into a symbol. Teammates carried the weight differently. Some withdrew. Others played harder, trying to convert anger into motion. A vigil was held. Candles flickered as names were spoken. Brandon's name lingered longer than the others. Family members stood together, supported by neighbors and classmates. There were no speeches that night, just silence and shared loss. Behind closed doors, investigators faced the hardest part of any violent crime case without immediate resolution: deciding how to proceed when progress slowed. Resources were finite. New cases demanded attention. Still, Brandon Smothers' file stayed open. If charges were filed later, they would be announced with care. If the case stalled, it would remain unsolved, not forgotten. Law enforcement made clear that silence from witnesses was the single greatest barrier. They stated plainly that someone knew who fired the gun. As time passed, the community adjusted outwardly while carrying the fracture beneath the surface. Parties felt different. Parents imposed stricter rules. The sound of loud music at night no longer felt harmless. One decision, one moment, had changed how safety was measured. The official status of the case reflected that tension: active, ongoing, unresolved. Those words carried weight without comfort. For Brandon Smothers, the record was final. 17 years old, shot at a party, died before reaching adulthood. The rest of his story existed only in memory and photographs. The cost of that night extended beyond a single life. It reshaped a town's sense of certainty. It reminded everyone how fast ordinary moments could turn irreversible. Justice, if it came, would arrive late, and if it did not, the question would remain, hanging over every retelling of that night. Who fired the shots, and why did no one stop them before Brandon Smothers paid the final price?